welcome everybody to the Calling It Podcast, recording Thursday, October 3rd, just about the top of the 4 o'clock hour. I'm Alex, joined by Alex Lovewitz, and you hear that noise in the background. That is because we have a guest. That is right, we'll be returning to guests on the program as the Bruins get underway, NHL gets underway. Talking about hockey, but joining us from CLNS Media is the one and only Evan Marinofsky. Evan, thank you for joining us.
Anytime, guys. I'd do anything for you, Alex. You know, you're a fellow CLNS guy. We got to stick together.
Too kind, too kind. All right, let's start with the big question. The Bruins ripped our hearts out last year. That was a painful pain. It's pretty much the same team back. Why and how do fans get reinvested in this team that crushed us not even 6 months ago?
Well, they should get reinvested because they are a really good team. You know, in the regular season, they'll be a great team. They're going to be a top five team in the NHL. And there's nothing that says they won't be. Obviously, they're in a very tough division, but top to bottom, the lineup's really good. The only loss they had was Marcus Johansson. I don't think that's going to be a big factor into things. The core is still there. The younger guys have another year of experience. I just think overall the team is really exciting. They're coming off being a win away from the cup. I think it's time to get over that. I think you got to move on to the next season. And I mean, I think they have a really exciting team. My playoff prediction for them is not as exciting, but for the regular season, they should be really good. And it should be a really fun season to follow along.
So from a motivation aspect, do you think that coming off of a loss, game 7 of the Stanley Cup, is that a benefit? Is that something that you think will get them off to a hot start early on in the season?
Well, so normally I would say yes, but for some reason this year I say no. And the reasoning is I think the shortened off season, a lot of the veterans had very limited training camps. They were focusing on, you know, battling injuries. David Krejci's battling an injury right now, Patrice Bergeron. So that doesn't really help. And then the start of the season. They start tonight in Dallas. Then they go to Arizona, Vegas, and Colorado. They start right out west off the top of the season. So it's totally a real thing that they could start slow. But I think that'll wear off quick. Sometime after October, because I think October is very tough for them. They play Toronto twice. They play Tampa. They play St. Louis. So they have a lot of games in October that are really going to be exciting, but also very easily losable. So I think that the momentum that team, you know, after 2012-13, the next year, the Bruins came back and won the President's Trophy. But that kind of gets discounted because that 12-13 season was lockout shortened. So they really didn't even play a full regular season with the playoffs included. Last year, they played over 100 games. So I think they're going to be tired to start the year, and they might start off a little slow. But I think once the season gets underway, once November hits, they'll be right back in their mojo.
All right, so you talked about the older players there a little bit. But like I mentioned at the top, not many new acquisitions for this Bruins this offseason. So a lot of people are banking on the younger group, the really younger group, either improving or some of the guys who will be making their debuts this year. Who on that younger side that's maybe not a household name to casual Bruins fans? Give me one or two of those guys who you think by the end of the year will be household names, if there are any.
Well, so I think Danton Heinen's due for a big jump. His production in the past 2 years has been good. He's been very inconsistent, very spotty. I think this is the year he finally takes that big jump. Not saying he's going to be getting 70 points, but I think 55, 60 point range, which is very, very good. Those are top six numbers. I think the right thing for Heinen is put him on the first line with Bergeron and Marchand, move Pastrnak down to the Krejci line with DeBrusk. But, you know, Cassidy said he'll think about doing that in games, but he's not going to really start on that.
Why do you think that's the way to go? I'm just curious, because that top line in the regular season last year was so dominant. Obviously, it took a step down in the playoffs, but that was considered one of the best lines in hockey. Why break it up?
Well, so the only reason I would say break it up is spread out the production. And the Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak line is arguably the best line in hockey. I mean, they didn't help themselves in the cup last year, but in the regular season, they're one of the best. I think really where it comes down to is that second line right wing slot is still a question mark. You know, Coleman's penciled in for tonight, and they expect him to be the guy, but there's also a good chance he won't be that. And so, you know, you're going to have Krejci and DeBrusk with a second straight year of nobody on that right side. So the easy thing would be move Pastrnak down, have him bring some of that production Him and Krejci have that great chemistry. And then on the top line, anybody works with Marchand and Bergeron. Like, statistically, anybody works. From Brett Connolly to Riley Smith to Dave Pastrnak, whoever it is, they work with those two guys. Those two guys just breed production. So, you know, Danton Heinen would be the easy choice to go up there. Anders Bjorkstrand in Providence, but it was a consensus choice to go up there. Again, Cassidy sort of always mixes up the lines in games. So I think it's totally possible that he mixes and mingles those two lines during games. I just don't really see him ever doing that for a set lineup for an entire game. And then the other young player, I'll answer the other one. Okay. I think it's Connor Clifton. I think Connor Clifton and or Matt Grzelcyk. I think it's either one of those two that make a big jump. I mean, Clifton, you know, Cliffy Hockey was just it was like Minshew mania during April, May, and June last year. You know, he's incredibly aggressive. He's very offensive, great skater, you know, never afraid to jump into the play. I think he has a lot of potential and a high ceiling for scoring a lot of points. Maybe not this year, but I think this year he gets in the 20-point range. And I think Grizzlick's due to sort of, I don't know if he's going to have a huge jump in points, but his effectiveness is, he's so effective on the ice. Nobody exits the zone like Grzelcyk. And I think that, you know, at some point, you know, he's going to get more than 20 points. He's going to get in the 30-point range. So I would expect both those guys on defense. They're ironically enough, they're D partners. I would totally expect them to have big breakout years this year as well. So Heinen, Clifton, and Grzelcyk. Those are my three.
Zdeno Chara, he's now, what, 42, 43 years old?
He's like 42.
42, so what could be his last year in the NHL. And he's still someone who gets a lot of time on ice each night. But who else do you expect to kind of pick up the load with what will probably be a lessened workload for Chara this season?
So I think, you know, the easy answer is his defense partner, Charlie McAvoy. I think McAvoy, you know, in past years, they put McAvoy with Chara to kind of get McAvoy ready for the NHL, to sort of have Chara there as his insurance. Now it's flipped. Now McAvoy's Chara's insurance policy on the ice. And I think McAvoy's going to have to find himself in that position a lot to try to help him out as much as he can. Aside from that, I don't know if you guys can hear that noise go right past me, but I think the Carlo and Krug line, or the Carlo and Krug pairing, is going to be huge. They were huge in last year's postseason. They're going to be big this year. I mean, you know, Krug and Carlo were taking a lot of minutes against the Blues top line, against the Hurricanes top line, and against the Blue Jackets top line. So I really expect that to sort of translate to this year as they kind of limit Char's workload to penalty kills and not as many minutes against other teams' top forwards. But at the same time, like, he's still effective. You know, the huge stick still helps him. I mean, one of the biggest things that's helped him throughout his whole career is his huge reach. You know, Peter Shirelli once said he took up like a fourth of the defensive zone. And so that hasn't changed. You know, he's still the same height. He's still the same reach. So I think that, you know, his speed obviously has always been a little bit of an issue. I don't think he's going to be playing as many minutes this year. I think they're going to try to save him. But I totally would expect this to be his last year.
All right, speaking of keeping an eye on minutes, Tuukka Rask was last year a fluke.
Oh, yes. Yes, no.
It was a fluke?
No. I meant, oh, yes, to the watching minutes. No, it was not a fluke. I don't think last year was a fluke.
So what do they have to do to make sure he can pull that off again?
Well, it's the same. It's the exact same coaching style they did last year. You do the two-goalie tandem with Yaro Halak and Rask. I would be surprised if Rask got more games in October than Halak does. I think Halak will get a lot of games to start the year. You know, Rask had that heavy workload all playoff long, you know, shortened summer. Halak didn't play at all during the playoffs, so he's way more fresh. And I think part of the reason that Rask was so good in the postseason last year was because Yaroslav Halak, you know, took half of the games during the regular season. So Rask, you know, Rask's best seasons have come after playing the least amount of games during the regular season. So they figured that out, and they know that that's going to work. And so they're going to go with that again this year. They're a two-goalie tandem. It's done all over the NHL. You know, Dallas Stars, the Bruins are playing tonight. They now do it with Ben Bishop and Anton Khudobin. They kind of split time. Bishop gets a little bit more, but they primarily split time. And it's all to conserve the goalie. It's all to keep the energy up. Because I guarantee you, if Rask played 10 or 15 more games during last year's regular season, he would not have been as successful as he was in the postseason. So, no, I don't think it's a fluke at all. I think, you know, Rask is an elite goaltender. And I think he's going to have kind of a similar track to this year because of how last year worked out. The one thing I would watch out for, though, is Halak having a little bit of a drop off. He's 35.
That's what I was going to ask you. Part of the reason they could do what they did last year is because Halak played so well.
Correct.
What's the backup plan if he doesn't? What if he comes out and he just sucks? Do they still need to stick with it?
Then there's no backup plan.
The goalie, or does Rask have to play?
Well, actually,
so the whole
season
you're saying essentially relies on Halak.
In some ways, yes. I think it really does. I think Halak was one of the most important. I mean, you could make an argument that Halak was the most important player on the Bruins last year. But when it comes to this year, yeah, there really is no backup plan. And one thing that when the Bruins were cap strained this summer, with McAvoy and Carr having to re-sign both those guys, and I never thought in a million years they'd keep it under the cap. You know, right now the Bruins are about $1.5 million under the cap, which is incredible. I don't know how that happened. But when they were in that kind of, when they were cap constrained,
they didn't sign anybody this offseason.
Well, they never
just
do.
Re-signed people.
Well, but even with the re-sign, they had no space. They really didn't have enough space for what McAvoy, Carlo, Heinen, Clifton, they were all worth. And they all signed for a little bit less, especially McAvoy and Carlo. But before those guys had all signed, I said, well, you know, Yaroslav Halak's your backup goalie. He's making $2.5 million. You could easily free up some space there, you know, trade him or something, you know, do something, you know, bring in a backup goalie for $900,000 or whatever it is and go from there. But it's very lucky they didn't have to do that. I don't think that was ever a plan, but I'm not the Bruins general manager or anything, but I think that, you know, they realize how good they have it. And I think that if Halak came out this year and was bad, the backup plan is Maxim Legace. He's in Providence right now, I believe. They signed him, I believe, from Vegas this offseason. You know, he's not anything great. He's never really had a full season in the NHL. So if Halak doesn't work, I don't think Legace will work much better either. It's hard. I mean, Halak, you know, he's 35. He looked good in the preseason. I mean, keep an eye on him having a drop-off of a year. But he looks good, and I don't think much has changed on that front. You know, he's got a year left on his deal. And again, like, Halak was so good last year. I wouldn't be surprised to see him have a tiny bit of a drop-off. But even if it's 75% of what Halak gave him last year, I think they'll be fine. It's anything under that that I think the Bruins will be in really big trouble.
I just want to ask you something more big picture. You know, you have Patrice Bergeron a year older, Krejci a year older, Marchand, Rask a year older. We obviously mentioned Chara. Is this the last year for the Bruins to really capitalize on this roster?
Well, with Chara and Krejci, yes. With everybody else, I mean, Bergeron, I think, will be around a little bit longer. Marchand will be. Pastrnak will be. But for that old veteran core, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this was Chara's last season. On a recent Bruins beat I did with Pete Blackburn, he brought up the fact this could be David Krejci's last season, and it makes really good sense, actually. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that be his last season, this be his last season as well. So yeah, I mean, I think this is their last shot, but I think last year was their last shot. I mean, last year was the perfect lead up to it, and it just totally fell apart. And so I think that, you know, you have an easy road there playing the Hurricanes and the Blue Jackets. And, you know, from the West, the Blues were a very good team, and they played better than the Bruins. But there were much harder Western Conference opponents the Bruins could have been pinned up against, and it would have been worse. So I think that, you know, personally, last year was probably their last go of it. My playoff predictions for this year is the Leafs finally leapfrogged the Bruins in the standings and finished second. The Bruins finished third. They play in the first round again, which is so terrible that, you know, hockey's such a – you know, what's great about hockey is – it's so unpredictable. And because of the playoff formatting, you know that most likely the Bruins and the Leafs are going to play in the first round. And I think this is finally the year where the Maple Leafs kind of surpass the Bruins, at least for this year in the division, and then beat them in the first round in 7 games because they have the home ice advantage. So I think last year was their last go of it. But, I mean, who knows? They're a top-ranked team this year, and you never really know because that's hockey, right?
Okay, a couple more before we let you go here. Just on the NHL as a whole, give me one team this year you think will surprise people with how good they are, and one team you think will surprise people by being a disappointment?
Ooh, okay. So everyone's looking at the Avalanche and the I'm a UMass guy. I want Cale Makar to be the greatest defenseman that's ever lived. But I think the hype train for him is so big that it's hard. And the hype train for the Avalanche is so big that it's hard to imagine them living up to expectations. But that's not the team that disappoints. I'll start with a surprise team, because I'm going to try to think of a disappointing team as I talk about the surprise team.
Okay.
I think a team that a lot of people are looking over is the Montreal Canadiens. And I tweeted about this today. The Canadiens have a lot of good young talent. They still have Carey Price in net. Claude Julien's, as much as we make fun of him, still a great coach. They're a team that I think is going to – I mean, they missed the playoffs by 2 points last year. Nobody really talks about them because they don't have a lot of superstars. But, again, the young talent, all that stuff, I think they're going to be a team that surprises. I would say the Dallas Stars will be a team that surprises, but they literally came within a goal of going to the Western Conference Final last year, so I don't know if they'd be really a surprise. They're my pick to be the Western Conference Cup finalist. And then a disappointing team. I mean, I said the Avalanche, but it's hard to imagine them really, like, you know, flopping. The disappointing team is tough, because there's such parity in the league. It's hard to see really a disappointment. I mean, I think the Winnipeg Jets are kind of a team that, you know, they've lost like all their defensemen. Dustin Byfuglien might not even come back. So they're a team that could. I think the Florida Panthers could flop. You know, you have Sergei Bobrovsky in net now, but you wonder how that's going to hold up. They scored a, you know, Bobrovsky helps them, you know, with their biggest problem, which they allowed a bunch of goals last year. They scored a bunch, but they also allowed a bunch. Now they're going to be scoring a bunch and not allowing many, but you never know if the Bobrovsky thing could not pan out. And then one thing that I think there'll be a Metropolitan team that flops. So, you know, the Rangers went out and signed Panarin last offseason. They signed Trouba, or they traded for Trouba. They signed Trouba, and they got, you know, Kaapo Kakko. They're a team I could see, you know, totally missing expectations. The Devils, if Corey Schneider doesn't hold up in net, you know, with P.K. Subban and Jack Hughes and Taylor Hall, they might flop. But the big one's the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, they have notoriously been terrible at developing goaltending, and it feels like they finally have it with Carter Hart. And it would be the most Philadelphia thing ever for, you know, that idea of him being the savior to just be eradicated and them to be terrible. So I think the Metropolitan Division is the one, now that I think about it, is the one where the disappointment is really going to come from, because there's so many good teams. Someone's got to suck, right?
Could be that whole division. Who knows?
Could be the
last question goes to you.
Oh, I'm almost. I thought that was the last one. I think you.
I was going to give you one NHL question.
Alex, Barth, ask me a question.
You want one more? All right. If Levitz wants to pass it off, I'll ask
I'll
you.
I'll pass it
here.
Off. I was not anticipating the assist here.
All right. We're starting to get there now. You look at Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, they were drafted a long time ago. And obviously they're both still playing at a high level, but when does that drop off start to come? Are we approaching it?
Oh, I don't think it's hard to imagine an NHL.
Those guys have been playing for more than a decade.
Oh, way more than that. I think it's so funny. You can't even imagine the NHL without those guys at this point. I mean, we're all young, us three are young guys. So, you know, we've grown up, that's the NHL we've grown up with. One thing I love about coming on a podcast like yours is neither of you, I don't think, are necessarily hockey guys. And
I mean, I'm a hockey fan, but I wouldn't describe myself as a hockey. You know, I don't follow it like you did.
I know. So I'm glad to bring that. My point, though, is when you have someone who's not a fully 24/7 hockey person, they think outside the box. So if you come on the Bruins, if you see the Bruins beat and the writers and even myself, you know, sometimes we fall victim to not thinking outside the box. And, you know, people who say trade this one, we go, oh my God, I can't believe you'd say that. And so I've never heard anybody say the Crosby Ovechkin thing. And it's like, it is so true. I don't think they're approaching it. I think the Penguins are due for a drop off. The Capitals will still be really good. So I think, you know, Ovechkin scored last night. I think those two will be fine. I expect a drop-off from them in, like, you know, 100 years. It's hard to imagine.
So, well, wait. So let me ask you this then. Which one of them starts to show signs of aging first? Who do you think is better conditioned to have a career?
Well, Ovechkin has the gray hair going, but he's had that gray hair going for a while. I mean, the nature of Crosby's dominance comes, I think, you know, the effectiveness will start to wear off Crosby, I think, a little bit more, just because he's a center. He's all over the ice. You know, Ovechkin's a sniper. His presence is felt all over the ice, too, but he's a wing, so it's not as much, you know, just kind of set up on the right dot and just get ready to fire a one-timer. So I think Crosby's game starts to show, because Crosby does everything, you know, and his edge work. I think Crosby's the first one to show signs of decline just because of his position and just because of the role he plays on the Penguins and in their offense, whereas Ovechkin, you know, might show signs too, but it's not as obvious because his position doesn't require him to be what Crosby is. So that's my answer on that one.
Will Jágr still be playing in the KHL or wherever when those guys retire?
Yep, Jágr is actually never going to stop playing hockey ever. Even when Jágr dies, he's going to die like still playing hockey. That guy, I saw a highlight the other day on Twitter of him sniping. He sniped home a goal. He's like 49 years old, and he's still like just picking corners. I mean, it's unbelievable what that guy can do. I'm surprised he's not still in the NHL. I mean, I'm not surprised, but I am because I feel like Jágr would keep pushing to be in the NHL.
All right, Evan Marinovsky, tell them where they can find your stuff as the Bruins get underway.
Ooh, you can find my stuff at BruinsCLNS on Twitter. You can find my stuff at emarinovsky on my own Twitter. You can find my writing at clnsmedia.com. And every Tuesday, you get your Bruins fix with Bruins Beat, podcast done by yours truly. So, yes, there's a lot of Bruins podcasts that are coming out now. Bruins Beat, I'm happy to say, has been longer tenured than all of them. And it's out on Tuesday mornings, so you can go listen to that. And I think the Bruins are going to be a fun watch this year. I think there's a lot more hype going into the season than last year or the year before. I mean, this is the most hype the team has been, I feel like, since the early part of this decade. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a fun team. Standing in Boston has gone up a couple notches, too, which is really fun. So I think this is going to be fun, and I hope you all join along with me. It's going to be great. I can't wait.
All right, Evan Marinovsky, thank you very much for joining us, man.
Of course. Anytime, guys.
All right. So there we go. Evan Marinovsky, little Bruins preview, little NHL preview. Lebowitz, he has me in my own head now because I'm thinking, like, as a Patriots beat guy, am I not thinking outside the box enough? Apparently beat guys don't think outside the box.
You think outside the box more than most. So I was actually told
earlier this week I think outside the box too much as a reporter. So I'm all kinds of scrambled.
Well, maybe you're just the polar opposite to Evan. Maybe you're his.
I mean, that's my goal. That legit is my goal.
Yeah, but that's a good thing. You need to have people like that. And I think that question's a valid one. You talk about the two most marketable stars in the past decade in hockey. When will their fall off come? I think we have the discussion with every sport. God knows we've been having it with Tom Brady for the past decade as well.
I almost followed up instead of Jágr. I almost followed up who's done first, Crosby or LeBron, but it's different sports.
And speaking to the Jágr thing, he said he'll be playing when he dies. Jágr's probably going to go the way of Ted Williams. It's going to be a cryogenic chamber because he wants to be one with the ice.
That's awesome.
Is that too far?
All right. No. That's great. I was trying to tell where you were going with that. And that's true. One with the ice. Good call. All right. We went a little bit over there what I wanted to go. But that was good stuff. Again, thanks to Evan. You can check Bruins Beat out actually right above our podcast on the CLNS Media website. But we got to talk a little baseball. First time in a while. The Red Sox are not in the playoffs. Don't need the reminder. They were awful. But wild card games going on. They're done. DS's start tonight. Let's just go to the wild card games at Lebowitz in general real quick. Are the wild card games the best thing the MLB does? Because I think they might be. Nothing is better than sports. It's the same reason March Madness is better than the NBA Finals, etc. I think, like, under the radar, the wild card game is the best thing the MLB does.
There's nothing better than a one-game playoff. And it's kind of the only thing the MLB has done in modern major league history that has, you know, been a good move and brought fans more joy and just made it a more entertaining product. There's just a certain atmosphere you have, and you don't even have it in the playoffs. Having gone to a couple postseason games last year, the Red Sox, there wasn't that same energy. And I know that there's a difference between watching it on TV and being at the actual venue. but you can feel it, especially with that Nationals Brewers game. I mean, that's as good as it gets. You right. have the Buckner-esque play, you have that come from behind victory, and it's the home team winning adds to it a little bit more. And I think that that does definitely make it seem a little bit more inflated, but it's was just unbelievable to watch. And obviously you're going to get a dud here and there, but there's something special about it. There's a different feel when you watch it. And baseball is such a long-winded sport, so I think that makes it that much more refreshing to see.
Do you count the wild card games as a round? Because this debate happens every year where now people say, oh, the Tampa Bay Rays have won a round. Oh, the Nationals finally won a round in the playoffs. And we kind of talked about this last year a little bit, or even at the beginning of this baseball season with the Red Sox. Like, I love the wild card game. I do. I just said I think it's the best thing baseball does. But to me, the playoffs start tonight. It's the wild card lives in this gray area where it's definitely not the regular season, but it's not quite the playoffs. And I think that's part of the reason for the drama is that it is so in between. But I don't like, I'm not going to be like, oh, the Nationals won a playoff round. Round to me, except for in the NFL, implies multiple games.
Yeah, no. If you're a wild card team, you did not get the luxury to just going right into, the playoffs. You have to. It's the purgatory of Major League Baseball, essentially. Right. So yeah, it's like when you had, because we've had this before, when there's two teams in the division that are tied up and you have to have that play-in game. It's a play-in game. It's not the postseason. It's a play-in game.
Right.
So I think it's a completely different topic. That doesn't mean it isn't just as intense, though. And I think
it's still great, but I love this debate every year. We have it twice a year. We have it once with the baseball wild card, and then in March Madness with the play-in games, the 16 versus 16 and the 11 versus 11. I'm sorry, UNC Greensboro doesn't win a round in the tournament every year. They don't. There's a reason we say a 16's only won one time, right? Mm-hmm. It's because they've only won one actual game. I love the wild card. It's a lot of fun. But I'm not gonna give the Nationals or the Rays credits for winning a round of the playoffs.
To me, it's the hot dog a sandwich debate of baseball.
Yes,
that's how I see it.
There you go.
The hot dog is not a sandwich, by the way. I just want to throw that out there as well.
No, it is not. Neither is a burrito, by the way. Legally in Massachusetts, a burrito is not a sandwich. That is established law in the state of Massachusetts.
It's an overplayed conversation, but again, you've mentioned it. We have this discussion every year. I think we can put it to bed. Wild card play-in game is a play-in game, not a postseason game.
Right. Still fantastic, though.
Still great. Still great. I love it. Great.
Quick thought. We'll talk more about like the actual playoffs next week because the Patriots have kind of a couple sleep games here. But just some quick thoughts as we get into it here, the baseball playoffs, anything you're watching.
I'm really looking forward to this Yankees Twins series. You have two very, very powerful offenses going up against each other, and both teams with, lacking, we'll call it, starting pitching. So I feel like this has all the makings to be a five-game slugfest type of series. That's the one I'm looking for. That said, the Astros are a wagon. I don't see any team in the AL or the NL for that matter stopping them. Besides that, in the NL, Dodgers, they're due. We'll see if they get it done this year, but I also think that the NLDS round one matchup against the Nationals is going to be really tough for them. So it's some good matchups. It's going to make for a good postseason. I have a good feeling about this one.
All right, help me keep it short because you stole both of mine. I'll say it a little differently. In the AL, just let the Yankees lose. I don't really care who comes out of the AL, just not the Yankees. Right. This is still a Boston podcast. I am recording this 2 miles from Fenway Park. Do not let the Yankees win a playoff game. Nevertheless, a series. And the Astros are a wagon. They should take care of business. And then on the other side, I want to see how the Dodgers blow it. I think the Dodgers might be just as much of a wagon as the Astros. We talked about it on that trade deadline show we did. I really like what the Dodgers have put together. But as history shows us, they're going to choke. They're going to find some way to screw it up. So let's see how, let's spin the wheel and see how the Dodgers blow it. But no, you got a lot of good teams and the Tampa Bay Rays in the playoffs, and it should be a fun time. So we will talk more about that on the next show. We might have some basketball to get into soon. Definitely more football, like I said. Lebowitz, I know there's a kicker thing going on, and maybe it's just me being selfish that I've talked about it a bunch the past couple days down in Foxborough, but Giants and Redskins, does that wet your whistle at all? Does that float your boat at all?
No. Giants do, because it's going to be...
You know, there's a little rivalry there. That's fair.
There is, and you also have you have Jones coming first game. We'll see. Daniel Jones, you think he sucks?
All right.
We'll see. So he looks like Eli, so I feel like there's some there might be some commonalities there.
A little teaser there for next week says Daniel Jones sucks. So we'll get to all that on the next show. Until then, make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Coleman Podcast and check us out online in Bruins Beat as well. Thanks to Evan Marinovsky for joining us to talk hockey. You'll find those podcasts at TLNSmedia.com. For Alex Lovewitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.